I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy? Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Roxo Media House.
Jeff Wilson started covering the Texas Rangers in 2008, though he'll never forget 2021. Out on his own, he decided it was time to do a podcast, but his wheels were spinning until a nerd came along. There's no going back now. Welcome to the Texas Rangers Baseball Podcast. Here's your host, Jeff Wilson, and the recliner nerd himself, John Moore.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Rangers Today Baseball Podcast. This is episode number 69. And today, joining us from Richmond, Virginia, is going to be Hannah Huseman. She is the Texas Rangers Mental Performance Coordinator. That's an interesting job, and we're going to hear all about that. But first, we got to go to the big leagues. And behind you, you got Corey Seager up there, who was in town. But Fan Fest was going on last week.
Right,
I hated missing that, but I had my own issues with people coming in my room and everything else.
Oh, my God. We got to talk about that.
I know. That's a crazy
We're also joined by Desmond Bain on this basketball.
Former TCU great. NBA
Memphis,
player.
Memphis Grizzlies. I don't know if he's going to be an all-star, but he's pretty darn good. But anyway, yeah, Fan Fest.
We know everyone.
We do.
Yeah.
We do. So Fan Fest was good. I think it was nice for the fans at large,
right,
to get involved, get back to the ballpark. You know, they hadn't had this since 2020. They had it right before COVID happened, and
right,
you know, then 2021, I don't think they're going to have it because there's still the lingering COVID stuff.
There was the lockout too.
I think they were going to try to have it in 2022, but like you said, the lockout, and they couldn't have any contact with the players. So
right.
Had it this year, had it last weekend. It was great. I got there at 9. There was already a huge crowd waiting to get in there on the plaza on the north side of the stadium. So, Joel Perez, our producer, was there, got some videos that are on the YouTube channel.
They're on the
channel
YouTube channel. Hey, hit the subscribe button down there, guys.
The DeGrom and, Heaney
Evaldi, the news,
a lot of views. It's a pretty good one to see how they interact.
But. Absolutely. Chris Young, there's a long interview with Chris Young.
Yeah,
it's kind of in little pieces, but he came out and talked about a lot of stuff. That was cool.
Yeah, no, and you know, and then we had a chance to talk to Chris Young, you know, hit him with some questions that we hadn't had answered in a while. Talked to, I'm trying to think of it, how we did it in order. I believe it was Jacob DeGrom, Josh Young, Mitch Garver, and Corey Seager, who's behind us.
You said, we saw Corey all last year. Corey is a nice guy, but he's not very open and talking. But you said he was fantastic.
Yeah, he was like super relaxed.
I think he feels like this team's going to do something.
Well, I I asked him about this. It's a pretty big deal when you're signing your first contract with this new team You get ready to go to the new team. You have your introductory press conference, and 6 hours later, baseball gets shut down. So you don't get a chance to get to know the coaches.
Right.
You don't get a chance to have a fan fest where you can get to meet some of the guys or come in for a workout and meet some guys. Spring training was shorter.
Yeah.
Meeting the media is a deal. I mean, he admitted later in the year that was a bigger deal than he thought it was going to be. And so I think now he's relaxed. He's Corey Seager. He had a great off season, he dropped the puck at the Stars game and just,
he's getting involved.
He just seemed totally relaxed, he joked about not having to face Jacob DeGrom anymore, even though he had like a 3.55 average against DeGrom, 14 at bats, but he's like, oh, this guy killed me, blah, blah, blah. No, it was pretty much your side there, Corey. But so that was good to see. I'm not saying he's going to give us his life story every time we come up to talk to him, but
I think
he understands that he needs to be out there a little bit more. He's Corey Seager. He's
absolutely
the highest paid position player on the team. He has the longest contract. He's the guy who one of the two guys they built the team around.
Sure.
On the lineup side. So that was kind of nice to see. And also, I was going to talk about this later, but might as well bring it up now. Also very relaxed on Friday was Kumar Rocker.
Yes.
He was also wearing Stars gear there.
You mean Thursday?
Thursday, whatever day it was.
Yeah, I was out there for that one.
He was really so much more relaxed than he had been on the conference call right after he was drafted Zoom. And then right after he signed.
Right.
I kind of think that he was so ready to get started.
A lot of questions were coming up about that shoulder and everything. And
he just wanted to get started.
He wanted to go prove to everybody, hey, I'm ready to go.
And now he's a ball player again. And I think that he has found a comfort zone in that. So
did he look thinner to you?
I don't know. He doesn't.
He's a tall. I mean, this is a big boy.
And I tell you who was almost as big as him was Dustin Harris.
Yeah, Dustin's a big boy, too.
We'll talk about that later.
Yeah.
So that was one of my takeaways from FanFest. But, on the Chris Young side, left field appears to be right now going to be decided by internal candidates first. If they need to go get somebody, maybe they would get somebody. But so that opens the door for a bunch of guys. But one thing that Chris Young talked a lot about was Brad Miller, who did not have a good year.
He was injured, too, a little
bit. Well, that's just it. What we didn't know is he got injured the day before camp broke. He hurt his hip. Apparently he was playing third base at Milwaukee, which is in Maryville. And if you know anything about that ballpark, not that ballpark, but any Arizona spring training park, you can water down the infield for 45 minutes.
It's still going to be dusty later.
The ball took a bad hop on him and we never really noticed it at the time, but apparently that was kind of the start of it. So long story short, he was hurt all year. He ended up on the deal twice in the second half. The Rangers say he's healthy, and they think he's going to be more like the player they signed or thought they had signed, the player who had a really nice 2021.
Whose numbers in 2021 and that are better than what there is out there right now. Well, to sign.
Again, he's gonna hit right-handed pitching. And so
right.
If you can get into a situation with him as your left-handed hitting platoon member, and let's say Bubba Thompson
or Duran, is he
sure as your right-handed hitting component? It really limits for Thompson especially. It limits his exposure to right-handed pitching. There are a lot of lefties in the West,
right?
Not as many as there used to be, but still, it's something that he's going to want. It's you got to put your players in the best spots,
right?
And listening further to it sounds like they might want Bubba to be like a true fourth outfielder as well. Like if Leody Taveras needs a day off or if he's in a slump, well, just stick Bubba out there
because
he can play center field as well. Probably better than he plays left field.
Right.
So I think I walked away from that thinking that they're done shopping, and that Bubba's going to be on the team.
I've said this over and over, and people still, there are people that have given up on the season because they didn't go sign the left fielder.
Oh, Lord.
And I'm like, give me a break. I'm like, guys, I'm telling you right now, this team is, they're willing to spend money, and if the right deal was there, they would have spent the money. It's not there, and it's not prudent to go out and spend stupid money.
Yeah.
If the price for Conforto was way more than you wanted to go, don't go sign Conforto.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, you're just not going to go do it.
Uh-huh.
I tell you, and another guy not to sleep on, I think Mark Mathias might be a guy that
could see
some time out there.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the name that you know, he came over after the trade deadline and it was really good.
Yep.
You don't know what position he's going to play. He can play the infield corners. He can probably play the outfield corners. So he's kind of lost there. He can get lost, but no, you've brought that up. A couple of readers have brought his name up. So it's going to be, there will be something to write.
Yep.
You know, there will be a position battle. There will be two guys from a pool of probably eight, you know, with all these non-roster signings. You know, you got Clint Frazier, the former fifth overall pick, I believe he was.
Who's had a good big league season before.
He has, in a limited window. You know,
right.
you know, there are just some guys that it turns out you can't overexpose them, you know,
right.
and you do and it catches up to them. But so that's an interesting name. So, you know, we'll see how it all turns out. In left field, but
worst case scenario, yeah.
I mean, you know, there are people who have questions with center field too, with Leody, which, you know, I don't tend to have as much.
No,
but anyway, so if you have seven of your nine spots in the lineup that are pretty solid, they can cover up one or two, and you know, keep in mind this Rangers offense was fifth in the AL last year
in
runs scored. They didn't do great against elite
better teams, right.
teams, and that's their next step. But, you know, I said seven of nine. There are two questions still, and I wrote about this at rangerstoday.com. $5.99 a month, $60 for the year, $35 for 6 months.
$35 will get you through the whole season.
Whole season. Anyway, I wrote about the Josh Jung and Mitch Garver, who we also spoke to. You know, ever since last season ended, those two guys have been considered fixtures in the lineup.
Sure.
You know, the Rangers did not go address either position. You know,
nope.
Third base is for Josh Jung to play, and Mitch Garver is going to be a catcher or the designated hitter, or, you know, both.
And play some first. They can play some first.
Too. So I mean, those two guys are considered the lineup upgrades. And so they've got to produce. Otherwise, the lineup is what you got last year. So I think that, you know, I don't know if there'll be pressure on those guys. They've both done it before. You know, Garver, who was very open about his injury, you know, he talked about how he's going to be a little nervous. He's curious to know how it's going to hold up. So far, so good. You know, he's throwing to 200 feet. He has made the throws to the bases, not from behind the plate, but that distance and everything's at high intensity. Everything's been good. Jung said that he's found his swing. He's back in his right mental approach. You know, he's been knocked on some of these prospect rankings because he strayed so much last year from what he normally does. Let me get my number straight. In 99 triple-A at-bats, he struck out 30 times and walked 4 times. In 98 big league at-bats, he struck out 39 times and walked 4 times. So that's just not Josh Jung. That's not the hitter he was in college.
Right,
coming
right.
up through the minors, it was just last year.
He was selective.
Last year he pressed, and he admitted that. He wanted to get to the major league so bad. And, you know, he started out so good at AAA, and then we all thought, he's coming. Any day now, he's coming. And the Rangers just kept him down there to test out the strength of the arm. And as that was happening, he started trying to make more of an impression. Like, well, shit, I'm hitting 400. Maybe I need to hit 500.
Yeah.
He didn't say that, but it was along those lines.
And, right.
But we talked to him, and, you know, that guy is pretty dialed in on the mental side. And so we'll, you know, I'm going to ask Hannah about that. And somehow, I know she doesn't want to talk about specific players that are, nor should she. But
right.
Anyway, Josh seems to have bought into the mental side of the game. And I think that, you know, that's for a young player, that's a big component. And I mean, he had pressure last year. Well, shit, he's going to be the opening day third baseman,
mm-hmm.
which comes with pressure. he's a rookie of the year candidate, which might come with pressure, but he said he's just going to embrace it. He's made up like all these, he has these sayings and all kinds of things and a vision board. I don't know if that's what he called it, goals of what he wants to do this year. And
right.
So he's in the right place, it seems like. So anyway, FanFest is supposed to be a big happy time. You don't want a guy coming and say, "Holy shit, I'm lost. I can't do anything."
Yeah, I'm all off right now. Or Mitch Garver
say, "Oh God, my arm hurts like hell right now. I don't think I can make it to the season." No, they're all positive, all happy, all excited, and but if the questions that needed to be answered, I thought were answered.
Yeah, and on Garver, I went on last night with the Ranger Report podcast. CJ and Ben, good guys. I'd give them a shout out real quick. But I talked about Garver. They asked about Garver, and it's something that you can confirm with me on Garver. Garver is an added addition to this lineup that we've forgotten about. But he could have played all year in the role he was playing, where he was not playing defense. But he said, in his mind, he's a full better player when he's getting to play defense.
Yeah.
It's just part of his mental makeup.
No, and he talked about that, but he also had never had to be a full-time DH before.
Right.
So he learned some tools of the trade. It's not easy being a DH. It's not easy to stay involved.
Exactly.
It's tough.
Yeah.
He also did say, though, that his arm did hurt to swing. He had changed his swing, things that needed to be addressed this offseason that he's been working on. So, he could have continued to hit, but
he wanted to get it.
But he needed to get the surgery if he wanted to be a position player this year at the start. And it appears he's going to be.
Right. And that's what he wanted. That's what I was kind of alluding to.
Sure.
In his mind, he's like, look, I want to go at this thing full speed and ready to go next year. And if that's the case, I want to be ready to go now. What's the point? Do I need to be the DH? And I think for his mental state, he was ready to be he wants to be a full player. He wants to be able to play on the field and hit if necessary. I think that was just what I was saying on that. But anything else about FanFest?
No, well, not really. I mean, it was just a good time. But while Joel and I were, pounding the pavement there at the ballpark, you were in Florida. At a wedding.
My goddaughter got married.
Yeah.
Sweet little Morgan and her husband, Jason, got married. Congratulations to them. But it was...
You had an interesting thing happen at your hotel room.
Weird things always happen to me. I got another story I'll tell you sometime, too. Good. But this is...
You sent me the text, and I sent it to my friends. They thought it was hilarious.
So Kathy and I are... So we had... This is Saturday. The wedding's that evening, and we have to take a bus at 4 o'clock to go to the wedding.
All right.
From the hotel.
Yeah, okay.
It's about noon. We're sitting around, and there's nothing to do. I was not dressed. I mean, I'm in my hotel room. Kathy was just wearing a shirt and something, and so we're just kind of piddling around, figuring out what we're going to do. And when we checked into the hotel, they told us, since you're staying for 2 nights, unless you request it, we will not send someone to clean the room.
Uh-huh.
And we thought, okay, fine.
Yeah, that's typical these days.
Yeah, that's fine. So that works. Well, someone started jiggling the door. Now, I have nothing on. I'm just laying on the bed with the TV. And
you
got to
have something on.
Nothing.
Please.
Okay, let's just say I did.
All right.
For sake. And I said, is someone jiggling the door? And my wife goes, what? And I said, sounds like someone's trying to open the door. She gets up and walks over there. And she goes, it sounds like that. And I said, well, why we didn't just say, hello, don't come in or whatever. And I said, well, just tell them no. And so she was just going to open the door a little bit to tell them, hey, we don't need you. And she opens the door and the door is pushed in. And this old man walks in and says, I got to use your bathroom, and goes right past her into our restroom. And she goes, okay, 20 minutes.
Oh my.
He was in there. So I throw on my clothes and we're sitting on the bed and Kathy and I are just looking at each other like, what do we do? I mean, she goes, well, when you got to go, you got to go. And I'm like, this is so weird.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what? So he didn't make a noise for over 10 minutes. And I literally at one point, I was like, do you think he died in there? Or he passed out? And she goes, I don't know. I said, do I go knock? I don't want to scare him. Do I go knock on the door? All of a sudden, we hear about 15, 20 minutes in, we hear the toilet flush. I said, okay. All right, he's getting out. He walked out, looked me in the eyes. I was standing up. And his eyes got that big. And then he saw Kathy. And he went, am I in the wrong room?
Oh, my God.
And I was like, you are. And I said, what room are you supposed to be in? And he said, I'm in room 435. I said, this is 335.
Oh, my God.
335 is the room right off the bathroom. I mean, it was right off the elevator right there. So I guess he had to go so bad that he paid no attention that that was not his wife that opened the door. And yeah, he scooted past. And you said, what made it worse is we ran into him three more times, and he would not look at us. Huh. He would not even look up. And I'm a guy that if that had been me, and if I'd accidentally done that total mess up, I'm the guy that if I'd have saw him, I'd have walked up to break the ice and go, hey, can I borrow your key? I got to go again.
Yeah.
You know, or yeah, something like that. He did not. I don't know if he told his wife. So we were like, we felt horrible. We're like, we don't. He didn't go to the wedding, thank God. He had nothing to do with the wedding like that. But that was a story.
I would have called housekeeping at that point. Hey, you need to come up and fumigate this thing. Well,
Kathy started talking about that. And I said, how bad is it? He did not leave a mess. He left a... He did leave an odor, but he did not leave a mess.
Good God.
Oh, gosh. I know.
That's unbelievable.
It's just a crazy story. I got another funny one sometime, but we'll get in that one next time. But let's go to Hannah. Let's get her in here right now.
Yeah. Yeah. She might be able to help us after that.
The middle part of it. All right. Hannah Houston right after this, guys. We'll be right back. And joining us right now from, actually, she's in Richmond, Virginia, at her in-law's house right now. It is the mental performance coordinator for the Texas Rangers, Hannah Houston. We've been waiting to get her on here since kind of watching her work last year. Hannah, what's going on?
Hey, guys. Just hanging out. Excited to be here with you guys today.
We're very glad that you're able to make time. You know, the mental performance department with Ben Broody kind of leading the charge has really, like, been a huge story. Dating to last spring. How did this all come together? And why is this, why now? I mean, that's basically it.
That's a good question.
Yeah. Good question. I think, well, first and foremost, mental performance has been around for quite some time. Maybe not officially, but probably in the last 10 to 15 years, there's really been some traction on hiring mental performance coaches who actually go get educated in this. I was talking to somebody the other day, you know, the mental aspects of the game have always been around, right? Imagery, routines, goals, all that good stuff. But now you actually just have people who are going and getting an education in it who can, the way I describe it is speed up the process, right? Instead of guys having to be, you know, 10, 15 years into their careers to understand how to handle pressure, we can actually emulate some of that and provide strategies for them to figure it out really early on in their career so that hopefully they can have longer and more successful careers. But as far as the Rangers go, I believe we've had it for some time now. And it's kind of been rotating who's been in and out. But this past season, we kind of started from ground zero and started over and rebuilding it and recreating it. So, like you said, Ben hired myself and David Franco as co-coordinators, to build this thing from the ground up. So we really spent the last year building relationships with the guys, the players, the staff, front office, everybody to try and build relationships, but also help create our definition of what is mental performance. And like, there's a big difference between mental performance and mental health, and we can get into that if we want to. But just really creating clarity around what it is and how it can help them. And trying to open some of those doors for the guys to utilize it and realize they don't just have to, you know, be born mentally tough or able to handle stress, that we can actually do stuff about it to help them be the best version of them.
Well, what is then the Rangers' definition of mental performance?
It's basically making sure you're focusing on the right thing at the right time. To put it really simply, we just believe, you know, almost everything comes down to, you know, if you're playing really well, can you still lock it in? If you're playing poorly, do you still know what you need to be focused on? There's a lot of distractions. You know, being the eye of the hurricane is a lot of the examples that mental performance coaches use. And to us, it all comes down to what are you able to focus on in the heat of the moment? And if you can do that, chances are you've got a pretty solid advantage over your component. So, yeah.
You think these guys, you know, they've been the best at every level of their lives. They've been the best player, hitter, whatever. And not just, you know, Little League, high school, college.
If they went to college, absolutely. They were always one of the stars.
And even in the minors, you know, I mean, you can't be a bum and get to the big league. So what changes? Does something change at the major leagues?
Why do they become bums when they get to the big leagues?
Not necessarily, but they might.
Jeff said that.
They might encounter some difficulties for the first time in their careers. I just wonder if is that the biggest obstacle that these guys face, or is that more of a mental health question?
No, I mean, I think right, regardless of what level they're at, they're facing pressures and stressors and all of those things that you go through. But at the big league, it's just a bigger scale, right? It's and the thing I say all the time, it's same game, stay true to you, you know? But I guess the pressure can get really high up there. You're scrutinized a lot more when you're up there, maybe more so than you ever have been in your whole life. And maybe it's just the platform that you're playing on. I don't really think the game changes. I think maybe our perception of the game can change, and how much we let that affect us can potentially change when we get to the big leagues. Just because it's a whole nother level as far as outside noise, right? And everything that could potentially impact you. But one of the things I say all the time is I think the best parts of development and like young players growing up and going through struggle, whatever level it is experiencing failure before they get to that level, because I think it can help equip you with a lot of the skills that you need before you get on the main stage, right?
That's a life.
Totally. And if you've never failed before you get to the big leagues, I'm almost like, ooh, it's like almost too good to be true. And you're going to fail at the big league level because it's obviously the best of the best. And so it's never a panic when they're failing at the lower levels. It's all learning curves. And like, if you figure out how you can handle this, then you can handle it in the big leagues.
Are you finding that there's like a segment of players who are more open to it? Like are younger guys more open to coming to you, you guys and getting the help? Are veterans more stubborn about it, or is it reverse? I mean, is there a pattern that you have detected?
Honestly, not really. I think it's such an individual thing, where, you know, some people want it when they're really young and some people don't. When I talk about this, I usually compare it to just like some people really like working out and some people can't stand to work out. Some people really like eating healthy and some people really don't like eating healthy, right? And some people really want to work on their mental performance and some people don't want to work on their mental performance. So it's not really like the older you get, the less you want it, or the younger you are, the more you want it. It's a lot of what you've faced in the past, I think. And don't get me wrong, some people, like, just from your pure upbringing are naturally really resilient, right? They've been through a lot of hardship. And so they have natural resiliency and high stress tolerances and pain tolerances and all of those things. Just like people handle injury differently, people handle all these things. So I don't think there's really a pattern. It's just a matter of how much people are interested in, and that does change, right? That can change, right? Sure. Especially if maybe you've been so good your whole life and then you get to the big leagues and for the first time ever, you're struggling mentally and you've never really had to work on those tools because they've always just been subconscious going. And so sometimes that happens where it's just things you've never really had to worry about. Like, I mean, I was a college athlete and like ate McDonald's all the time and never needed it, right? And never thought anything twice because it wasn't a thing. And then I graduate and get out of college and start working out on my own. And I'm like, oh, you can't eat like this anymore, you know? So it's more so one of those things where you didn't know you needed it at the time because maybe you really didn't. And then all of a sudden it's like, wait, I think I could actually work on this and be even better. As you get older and build more awareness, I guess.
So how does the talk begin?
That's the question I wanted to ask.
Does somebody like...
Okay, let's do it this way. Here's a great example.
Okay.
I'm John Moore. I just signed a big deal to play with the Texas Rangers. Who initiates the contact? What happens first as far as you and I getting together? Do they suggest you to me and I go to you? Do you make contact? How does this initiate? How do you get with a player and how does it go?
Yeah, I mean, ideally, it's just like any other coaching scheme, right? Like you get like the hitting coaches is going to come get to know you and hear about what you do and how you do it and what makes you who you are, and then watch you for a little bit, observe, and then make adjustments or suggestions, if anything. And I think we're pretty similar to that. You know, I think that's the difference between mental health and mental performance, right? Is mental performance is just like you're training all the physical skills, you're training the mental skills too. So you might already have them, but maybe we can make them even better or make you even stronger or help you handle stress even better. So it's really just getting to know them and meeting them where they're at. And obviously some people utilize it more and some people don't utilize it more, just like other things. And just meeting them where they're at and then creating, helping just be a coach for them. But instead of mainly on the physical side of what they're doing, it's on the mental side of what they're doing.
So you don't wait for somebody to go into a 2-for-50 slump. This is something that
in a perfect world, right? I think in a perfect world,
you're proactive.
You're right. Exactly. That's what I was going to say. You're as proactive as you can with this, because the goal is right to equip everybody with the tools they need before they need them.
Yeah.
Cause you don't want to wait till the 2-for-55 to like, okay, now we're start talking, which sometimes it happens, right? Maybe they've had no exposure to mental performance in the past. And then it's like, well, that might do it. That might get you in there and start the conversation. But in a perfect world, yeah, we're proactive and they have all the skills they need to go. We're constantly trying to work ourselves out of a job, right? Like we don't want them to need us to handle things and emotional control and all that stuff. So, yeah, proactive is the ideal mental performance way of doing it.
So like, what are the tools you use? Is it conversation? Is it, you give them reading material? Do you play, I don't want to say games, but I mean, are there, what things can you do?
Yeah. All the above. All the above. And there's, this is how I think about it. There's mental performance, skills, right? Which is like confidence, composure, concentration or focus, motivation, resiliency, enjoyment, love of the game, all of those things, right? Those are what we're trying to achieve. And then the mental performance strategies, right? So you have the skills and then the strategies is like, okay, how do we actually achieve them? Like we know confidence impacts our performance. So what can I do to enhance my confidence or work on my confidence? Or what can I do to handle stress or to manage my emotions better and all that? And so I think that's the nitty gritty is helping them not just realize what their strengths and weaknesses are, but also giving them tools to actually work through that. That looks very different, right? It could be playing a game. It could be a mindfulness. It could be talking it out and creating more awareness around what their thoughts and emotions actually are. It looks different. And I think that's the best part of our job is we know there's no cookie cutter way. Like, hey, eat this magic cookie and you'll be really confident, right? Yeah. Or do this exercise and you'll stay really calm no matter what happens. It's like what fires me up might make you really sad, right? Or vice versa. Yeah. Like I was the player who, if a coach came and yelled at me and cussed me out, like I'd play the best game of my life that day, right? Yeah. But then I had my friend who was bawling in the corner, right? Which is okay. And it's such a human connection, and a huge part is not only knowing who the player is, but who the person wearing the uniform is. Because once we can help you figure out who you are, then we're going to have a whole lot better chance of helping you be the best you can be on the field. So figuring that out is kind of the fun part. It doesn't look the same. And I think that's where it separates from the textbook. Like, right, the textbook says, you know, if you stand in the mirror and power pose, you'll be really confident. And maybe sometimes that works and maybe somebody doesn't. And they're like, this isn't work. This isn't working for me. And it's like, cool, let's find something that does. And sometimes it's making up the craziest things. And I mean, like sometimes I'm like, I don't even know where we came up with this, but if it's working, that's all that matters. And you can't put that in a box. And I think sometimes that's really hard to explain when it comes to mental performance, because there is no cookie cutter way of doing it. And if there is, you're doing it wrong. I would argue you're doing it wrong, because we can't all do things the same.
Do you watch Ted Lasso?
Yeah.
So I'm assuming you might get this, you know, last season with the, they would go, you know, Ted would go in and lay on the couch. That's not what is happening, right? I think that might be where you were talking about earlier, mental health versus mental performance. Right. Is that a common misconception?
Yeah. I think it's probably even a misconception to some extent on the mental health side too. Right. But just to clarify, like the way I talk about it is you have think of mental performance and mental health on a spectrum. Right. On a spectrum where mental health, you have your like clinical anxiety, your clinical depression, ADHD, all the way even to suicidality, right? That's your mental health. And then mental performance is kind of those skills we were talking about. It's more on field, right? It's confidence, composure, focus, stress management, emotional control, all of those things. And they're all on a spectrum because, you know, if one's affected, it could be caused by the other one, or it could lead to the other one, right? If maybe you just get really anxious before a game and it starts as nerves and then it can turn into really, really worse. And then all of a sudden somebody doesn't want to get out of bed in the morning because they're so anxious, right? That's a clinical issue. It's no longer just a performance-based issue. So,
right.
Okay. But we don't have a couch. There's not, I mean, there's a couch, but you can sit on it. Like, it's not really, you're not coming late. It's just really different, right? And I think a big piece, and mental health has gotten a lot of TV time and news time and podcast time over the last few years, especially since COVID. And I think it's amazing. And I think it help creates awareness around mental health and mental performance, but they are two very, very different things. Like, I am not a psychologist. I'm not a psychiatrist. I am not a therapist or a counselor. I'm a coach, and that focuses on the mental side of the game. And so it looks very similar to other coaching, right? So what you would imagine, like, the hitting coaches are always in the cages. The pitching coaches are always in the bullpen. Like, we're always around, right? We're hanging in the food room. We're kind of mixing and mingling into everything, because the mental side of the game affects all things, right? Whether you're rehab, eating, working out, hitting, pitching. Sure. Like, it's so cool and it's so unique how it really does kind of just mingle into all the different entities of the game.
Yeah, we see you.
Yeah, that's, I guess,
doing,
I start
your job. I mean, last spring when we went before the lockout ended, I remember you. It was right after Josh Young had a surgery. You were new to the job, and it just, he. That's a guy who's dialed in. I think to his listening to him talk, he seems pretty dialed into it. But I'm sure he was going through tough times. But you got to get to know these guys. And
well, I always
You can't do it in an office, especially a baseball team, all the moving parts.
Well, I noticed her, like, we see her when you go, there's batting practice before every game, and we're down there around the dugout, and Hannah's around with all the ball players everywhere. I mean, she might be out in right field shagging balls, and then I see her playing catch, and I'm like, and then that's when I asked you, I said, who is that? And you go, that's the mental performance specialist. I was like, wow. And they just, I mean, you're mixing it up with the dudes out there.
Trying. Yeah. I mean, I think that's a huge part, right? Is like being in their world, right? If we just kind of post up in an office, like, yeah, you'll get some players coming in there, of course, but I think you want to get out there, be where they are. And again, a huge part is connecting with the human. And so building that relationship where they're most comfortable, which happens to be on a baseball field. Absolutely. So it's perks that I played softball, so I can actually not horrible when it comes to shagging and throwing and all that stuff.
But, that's what I was noticing. I was like, she's better than me. Look at her.
That's a perk. But yeah, meeting them where they're at. And it's just like coaching, right? It's just the only thing I'm not doing is wearing a uniform, but my co-partner, Franco, wears a uniform. So, I mean, if you saw him out there, you probably wouldn't even realize he was a mental performance coach. We're just out there being other coaches. We just have a very different focus than all the other coaches, which I would even argue most other coaches are thinking about the mental game too. And so even working with them on, if you're working on something or a new skill or acquisition for a player, like being able to work with them to support them too, it can be really awesome, because we're also constantly trying to bridge the gap between, like, you don't just have to practice mental performance in a classroom, in the meeting, in the office, whatever, but like get on the field, implement it. Like, so much of it is actually doing, like, when you're actually performing. And so putting you in that environment to practice those skills obviously is what's going to transfer over the best. So, you'll see me on the field.
And Ted Lasso, the rooms, the walls are confining. It's not their world. And you mentioned it. And I think the biggest thing is being comfortable,
Sure.
And I've been on the beat since 2008, and the example I always give is Nelson Cruz, who got DFA'd out of spring training. Nobody claimed him. He went to AAA, was the Babe Ruth of the Pacific Coast League, and then he came up, and the Rangers just said, Nelson, this is your job. You have nothing to worry about. You're going to play every day. And
Don't care if you go 0-15.
And that was the light. And it clicks for a lot of people that way, but every person's different. It's just,
here's what I heard.
But the confidence thing, he just needed the confidence from hearing that.
Well, it's like, what's his name? Lee Trevino talked about one time. Everybody talks about being able to make that short putt, which Hannah did, by the way. Y'all see that picture behind there where she played with one ball the whole time that she played one round. But he said when he grew up in Oak Cliff, Texas.
Yeah.
And they used to play $5 bets when he didn't have a dollar to his name. He said, you want to talk about pressure. Pressure isn't trying to sink a putt for $1 million at a tournament. Pressure's trying to sink a putt that you're going to win five or you're going to lose $5 and you don't have a dollar in your pocket. Yeah. He goes, that's pressure. So,
yeah, no, it's really fascinating. And then
this is your job is we've had people request to us to talk to you about your job. And I was like, that's cool. I thought I might be the only nerd that was really interested in what Hannah does. I thought that was cool.
Well, I just think it talks about how far baseball's come, too. I mean, you know, when Tom Grieve first got the job, you know, his GM job, he'll tell you he had one pro scout.
Yeah.
You know, and there was one trainer. And now it's the game's evolved to where players have what they need at their disposal. And I think – and Chris Young, I think, is pretty instrumental in this. Correct me if I'm wrong, but – yeah, I think his player perspective has really helped
being a player
what you do and helped this department move forward.
No, absolutely. I think you nailed it, right? The game is evolving. And I think we're realizing there's more and more things that we can actually do something about, right? Whether it's mental performance or analytics, like there's just proof and evidence and science backing this. And it's actually something you can do something about. And so why would you not use those and take advantage of that? And I think like maybe 26 out of 30 teams now have mental performance coaches on staff, like minimum of one. And some have teams up to 7 or 8 actually on staff.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
The mental aspect of this game is important.
Well, you came from the Phillies.
Yeah.
So how are the Rangers doing?
What do you, like in comparison?
Yeah.
Have like they caught from a mental up? Performance I mean, standpoint?
Yeah. I mean, I know you're not going to crap on your own
we're
job.
We're building it.
Yeah.
Yeah, we.
But would you say would you say things were behind?
Sorry, what'd you say?
Would you say that the Rangers, when you came into this job, were a little bit behind?
They had people here, so I wouldn't say behind. I'd say the teams who don't have anybody hired full time are the ones who are behind. And even some of them, they do contracted work, so I think they've been wanting to do it and just trying to find the right fits for the Rangers, because I do think it takes certain personnel that fits with different teams, right? What are the goals of this team? What's the org and like what fits best? And so like not everybody's the same cup of tea, right? That works for everybody. So I think finding the right fit, but they've had mental performance, I want to say for 7, 8, 10 years. So this isn't, I wouldn't say they were behind.
I apologize to everybody who I'm overlooking. You did a great job. I just didn't know about it.
Let me ask you this. Do they ever send you out maybe to some minor league kid in a certain area where you'll take off and say, hey, we want you to go talk to this kid or, you know, you need to, and do you ever do that? I mean, we see you at the big league level. So are you working throughout the system?
Yeah. So last year I worked predominantly in the big leagues, AAA and AA. And then Franco also like basically covered the rest of the minor leagues in AA and AAA also. So we actually just got approval. We're working on hiring a third, which we're really excited to hopefully hold down the fort at the Arizona complex and
cool.
Have a couple trips to the Dominican. But Franco speaks Spanish. He's awesome. So yeah, it was kind of two people covering all from top to bottom. So it was exciting. And like I said, just building relationships all year long. But yeah, that's where I was last year.
Awesome. So you mentioned the softball. You played at Tennessee Chattanooga. How were what did you do and how are the mocks back then?
Yeah, where'd you grow up?
Born and raised in Nashville. My parents still live in Nashville, so I get to visit pretty often. And then yes, I actually went to Chattanooga to play basketball. Fun fact about me that not a lot of people know.
Oh.
That answers a question I had. What other sports did you play? So
yeah, basketball and softball were my main two. Played basketball my freshman year. Lots of stuff happened and I was like, I don't know if this is what I want to be doing. So thought about either transferring and going and playing basketball somewhere else. But the softball coach at UTC had also recruited me along the way. And so I really liked my friends and the classes I was in. And so I went and talked to him and was like, can I come join you guys? He was like, heck yeah, come on. But I was in basketball shape, not softball shape, which is two very different types of shape. You were in cardiovascular shape for this, and softball, we needed to max out on squats every single day. So worked on about a year gaining my strength back and then played my last two seasons there. And I played center field for the most part. And then some first base when our first baseman got hurt. So it was a good time.
Yeah.
And we won our conference my senior year. Also.
Is it the Southern Conference? Which conference?
Yeah, Southern. Okay. Yeah, Southern Conference.
Okay.
And you dated the quarterback.
I did. Yep. Ended up marrying him. Couldn't get
him. I was
him
about
away
to say.
Nice. No, I went to Chattanooga on a little family vacation last year.
Oh yeah, you're the expert at Chattanooga.
And, yeah, I'm a real expert. It's awesome. I know it's
kind of a hidden gem. Anybody who comes to Chattanooga says the same thing. So we
love it. Kathy wants to retire to Chattanooga.
I mean, it's great. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
There's a lot to do. There's history. Mountains, yep. Fishing.
Lots of water. Yep. Hiking, all that good stuff.
Where did we go? We went to Nick and Norman's.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Nick and Norman's is solid. That was good.
There's pretty good food there. A lot of good breweries and pubs. It's awesome.
That's what I love.
Yeah, and that area we were north of town, I guess. You go across you cross over the bridge and there's that little park and it was great. We want to go back. It was fantastic.
Coolidge. You were at Coolidge Park.
Okay. it was great. It was great. We loved it.
Yeah. No, we love it too, for sure. Yeah.
And it's not far from Knoxville. It's not far from Nashville. We actually went to a Braves game. We drove down to a Braves game and saw Wash and it's pretty dang. It's spiffy. It's a nice town.
Yeah. So when you go to college, what were you studying? I mean, did you know right away you wanted to do this or what were you doing? Nope.
Not a clue. I studied exercise science in my undergrad. So I actually thought I was going to be a strength and conditioning coach for a long time. I knew I wanted to stay in sports to some capacity, in sports my whole life. Didn't know. I thought I was going to be a head coach at one point. I thought I was going to be a strength and conditioning coach at one point. And then my senior year, I took an elective course in sports psychology and was like, and my mom's actually a clinical psychologist. Oh. And so I was like, she's kind of always pushed the psych side. And I was like, Mom, I just can't work with Gen Pop. Like, I got to work with athletes. Like, that's just who I am. And like, all my friends are athletes, my brother, now my husband. Gen like, it's Pop. Just like, I just can't. I love Gen Pop, but I just need to be around like,
I like Gen crazy. Pop. That's going to be my new go-to.
I'm going to Sorry. That. I'm stealing that, Hannah.
Yep.
I used to say little people, but I'm going to go with Gen Pop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I took a sports psych class and fell in love with it. And then I found out you could get your master's in it. And I went to UT Knoxville, got my master's in it. And then I actually had my first baseball internship was with the Pittsburgh Pirates right out of grad school.
Right. Yeah. I saw that.
Yeah.
All right.
Nice. And that's so cool. So what do you, let me ask you this. I'm going to ask her some of these.
Yeah, go ahead.
So what do you do in your spare time when you're not doing that? Now your husband's a coach too, right? He's a football coach.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a college football coach, so it's usually watching football games or playing with my two golden retrievers.
I got two golden retrievers. They're great. A lot of vacuuming. God almighty.
Oh, yeah.
What are you Hannah, doing? I feel it. When we see Hannah, she's going to high-five me about, I got the greatest vacuum cleaner if you don't, or you got to tell me which one you're using. There's more hair than you can ever see.
I know. Ours are Honey and Whiskey are their names.
Ooh, that's ours a good combination.
Cooper and Mindy. So, yeah.
There you go.
You'll like this since our off-camera conversation about Marriott points. I actually use Marriott points to buy a vacuum cleaner.
Really?
Yeah. It was like a Hoover something or this. I don't know what it was, but it was 150,000 Marriott points back when I was swimming in Marriott points.
Well, I had to Google a vacuum cleaner for dogs.
Yeah.
And this one we got, I don't even know what it's called, but you can see how much hair. You go over a spot and just see all the hair that comes out.
It's so bad.
I love them, though. They're the greatest dogs.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no.
Don't vacuum three times a week, you're toast.
No, you are. It's bad. It's really bad.
We have two non-shedders and one shedder, so we're okay.
That's not bad. Three dogs is a lot, though. Two's
a
lot.
Oh, my God, it's a lot.
Oh, two. Oh, good Lord. So spare time you do that. What about food? What's your favorite type of food you like to eat?
McDonald's. You already said it.
No, that was college. I should have said that.
Tex-Mex here in like Tex-Mex or just good Mexican food or?
I honestly love like Americanized Mexican food because that's what I grew up on, but I love some good Tex-Mex. So
do you have a place in Surprise where you go to get Mexican food? I know it was a short spring last year, but maybe you found one.
Yeah, we went to some place. I cannot remember what it's called. It was okay. I'm not, even if I knew the name, I probably wouldn't recommend it. There is a place, I can't remember what it's called. It's right behind that State 48. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. No, I went there for lunch one day. Yeah.
There's a big Mexican place right behind there, and it's actually, that one's pretty good. That's what I'd recommend.
Okay.
I can't remember the name of it.
Jeff has lived in Arizona for 15 years, so he drove me around. He was like an Uber driver to me when I was there last spring. He knew where to go. He's taking back roads.
In Surprise?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He knows all of them. When we see you, he'll tell you where to go.
Yeah, I can get you around Surprise. I'm pretty strong in the West Valley. If we get east of 101, though, I'm in trouble.
So let me ask you this. So what's your favorite home cooked meal? Do you cook it? The husband, does he get out there and grill? I mean, what's your favorite home cooked meal you have?
Yeah, I think we're pretty split on cooking. But when I was at home for 2020 for the whole year, he started cooking and grilling, and now he's a grill master. So I'm going to have to say his infamous steak dinner wrapped in bacon, asparagus, and twice baked potatoes.
Oh my
God. And some red wine.
That's a home. Now I'd do a beer instead of red wine.
I'll tell you this: Virginia is a good wine state. Where she is now.
My wife likes wine. I'm a beer drinker, I like the pubs.
Wife and I went to Charlottesville.
Yeah, that's the best home cooked meal. So good.
Yeah, we went to Charlottesville. Me and the wife. It was cool. It was honestly, I think it was the weekend that they hired Chris Woodward, and we did a wine tour around Charlottesville, and it was good, and we had a guy driving us around, and we did it responsibly, but it was
check it out.
She did like a, you know, I guess there was some by state wine by state, and Virginia was like 5 or 6.
Is she a wine drinker?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, she's a wine drinker.
All right, last one. Got a good question to get you out of here. This is something we ask all the players. And we've got some great answers on this one. We got Jack Leiter. So the question is, what's something that nobody knows about Hannah Huseman? And now, like, Jack Leiter can't stand peanut butter. I don't know if you knew that. That's a big deal. He can't stand peanut butter.
That's a mental health thing.
Yeah. So what were some of the other ones we had? Chris Young is into the
true crime
documentaries.
We've had a bunch. Davis Wenzel lost a finger when he was 4, but what they were able to sew it back.
Blaine Krim used to take batting practice naked when he was 5.
That's right.
When he was 5 years old. John Daniels, you knew John Daniels. He has airplane underwear that he takes 2 pair of underwear that he always wears on the flight wherever he's going, and there's a pair saved for when he's coming home. And he said, "I'm still here. It always works."
Now, Hannah already gave something that we didn't know, that she went to college on a basketball scholarship.
Okay.
That's pretty solid, but you need another. You got to come up with another.
What is something that nobody knows about Hannah Huseman?
I'm a pretty open book, to be honest, but I don't know. Let me think. But while I'm thinking on one, I think that I did gymnastics for 9 years when I was younger. I was actually a competitive gymnast, but I got too tall.
What level?
You got too tall.
Level 10? Did you get to 10?
Level 6.
Level 6. My son got to level 6. He did that for men.
There you go.
For the men part of it. Let me tell you what. That is not a practice twice a week thing. That is a
practice 5 to 8 every day.
Absolutely. It's crazy, those girls.
Well, they were like, "You're getting a little tall." And then my mom goes, "You can either be a gymnast or you can play all the other sports." And I was like, "I'm going to choose all the other sports."
That's how you do it. That's how you do it. You need to play all the other sports. Well, anything else before we let her go?
No, but again, I mean, thanks for coming on. This is really this is great.
We tried to hook this up a couple weeks ago. She was having to fly out
to Arizona. She had to go to Arizona to talk to some minor leaguers. So.
But she was anxious. I really appreciate it. Hannah, thank you so much for coming on. We're going to see you out at spring training. Jeff will be out there a lot more than us, but we'll be out there from March 8th through the 14th.
13th, I thought.
13th or whatever, but we'll come find you. We'll see you run around. Of course, we'll see you at all the games this year.
Yeah.
Sounds good. I'll be there.
Awesome. All right. That's Hannah Huseman, the mental
performance
specialist for the Texas.
Coordinator. There we go, John.
Coordinator. I'll never get that right. She's just the one that does all the mental stuff.
She's going to give you, she'll give you some tips.
That's right. She's going to help me to remember that. Hannah, thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Okay. Right. We'll see you around. Big thank you to Hannah for joining us. Took time out with her family. She's there with the in-laws to stop down. That's pretty cool.
I feel pretty bad about it, but man, she's that was great.
She's sharp.
Yeah, you know, when we kind of, I love talking to the players.
Sure.
You know?
Oh, absolutely.
But when we bring in somebody who's kind of on the
closer to what we are,
behind the scenes, like when we had Kip Fagg on last year after the draft.
Yeah,
he's obviously out there a little bit more than Hannah, but. Man, that was great. I answered a lot of my questions that I hadn't asked. I was going to write about it last year, and it just never got around to it. I mean, it's a fascinating story that needs to be told, and I know other guys have told it, other beat writers have told it. So, I mean, I'm gonna do it this spring. I've got a lot of time in Arizona,
right?
But I want to talk to the players and be like, you know, is it weird? You know, how do you break the ice? Kind of like we did with her,
right?
And anyway,
well, you know, and this is another way you've brought this up before. When there's different ways to spend money with an ownership,
right?
Building the complex they built out there for the players,
sure.
And then investing money. I mean, these are full time position jobs for mental health, and not mental health. I mean, it's not mental for mental performance. Is not mental health.
Yeah, she can't write prescriptions.
Yeah, she doesn't have them on a couch asking, you know, did your dad beat you as a kid or something. He didn't do anything like that. She is mental performance and dealing with stress, and that's what you're wanting to get through there.
Yeah.
We had listeners that were fascinated with this, and they really wanted to know. Yeah. And I hope that you guys enjoyed that. But
yeah, I enjoyed it.
I did too. I thought it was fantastic. But now we got to go down in the bus leagues.
Yeah.
And that's why we got Aaron Zavala up there behind you.
Yeah.
We got to talk to all the leadership guys.
Right.
That were out there. That was last Thursday. It's Thursday now. You guys are dealing with snow, and so are we.
Snow, just ice.
Just ice, and it's melting. Yeah, you know what snow is, being from Colorado.
Yeah.
But it was good. Those guys were relaxed. Yeah. All of them came up to us and were coming out. They loved it. Said hello. They talked about being on the show. So I feel really good. They.
Well, of the 11, I think the only one who hadn't been on the show was Kamar Rocker.
Right.
And I said to him, "Hey, man, you need to come on our podcast." He goes, "Hey, I know. I've seen it." And he smiled.
Yep.
He didn't say, "I've seen it."
Yep.
But he said, "I've seen it." So I don't know. Let's see what we can do. But, you know, we say this a lot, but the Rangers draft talent, but they draft character. And these guys are all high character guys, or some of them who
one of them were nice.
Yeah. And they've gotten married. They felt at ease talking to us.
Yep.
Zavala is up because we asked him about his injury. There's a video on it on our YouTube channel. Yep. Basically, he is
almost ready to go.
Well, he's throwing, which is interesting.
But that surprised me that he was throwing.
Well, he hasn't swung yet. And, you know, in my mind, they're like, well, he's going to come back and hit first. All right. You'd figure he'd return to hitting first, but I guess the throwing program's longer. But, you know, he had the surgery in early February, and it's not the full blown Tommy John. They put a band in there, so the recovery time is sooner. But, I mean, he's 2 months out, he's throwing, you know, and Tommy, the big Tommy John, it is not 2 months. So.
Wait a minute, he didn't have it in February.
No, he had it in November.
November. Okay, you said he had it in February. I'm like, February.
I meant to say November. November.
Okay, so it's just been
it's been 2 months.
It was right after the offseason started. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he got hurt in the fall league, and so he had the surgery in early November, and then he said he started throwing a couple weeks ago. Last week, so you pin that down to early January. Yeah, that kind of surprised me. He's going to start swinging a bat at the end of February. Look, I mean, I think this guy has a chance to make his major league debut this year.
Another left field candidate.
Sure. I think that, you know, he's not on the 40-man. Dustin Harris is.
Yep.
Dustin was there. His wrist is fine.
Yep.
So that's good news. You know, when you look at the Rangers' depth in the outfield, and I'm going to write about this at rangerstoday.com for $5.99 a month, $60 a year, $35 for 6 months.
Absolutely.
You know, Evan Carter is one of their, if not the top prospect. He's a center fielder.
Right.
You have Harris and you have Zavala, who are pretty advanced guys who are a left and right fielder.
Right.
You have Anthony Gutierrez, the star of their class last year, their international class last year, who tore up the Dominican Summer League, came to Arizona and was hot, but kind of petered off a little bit. But they're so high on him.
Yes.
And he's a top 10 prospect. There's some outfield talent there, but there's some that's really close to the major leagues. And Gutierrez wasn't there, but the other three were. So
yep.
Just a good group. And some of them will be in major league camp. Carter is a non-roster invitee. Yep. Harris is on the 40. John Ornelas was there. He's on the 40. Leiter and Rocker not on the 40, but they're non-roster invites. So Foscue also not on the 40. He was their non-roster invite. So good group. We'll see a lot of them, and they're close, man.
No, it was nice to talk to him, and they are close in the depth that's there. We're not even talking about Harris as much when they're talking about the list of names right now that they're trotting out there. I mean, what if Harris comes into spring training and just kills the ball? I mean, look, he's on the 40 already. I mean, that's somebody that could displace somebody. This guy is highly thought of. I mean, he has really emerged power-wise.
I think it would put him on the map for later in the season. I don't know that he would make the team. Strange things happen at the Ranger spring training. But, he, it's not that he had a bad year. He didn't have the great year that he had in 2021, and he was injured.
Asked him if he was
a lot of talent there.
Kind of basically at the end of the year, he probably could have come back, but
just
precautionary. They were like, just go ahead and.
I'm sure he wanted to play in the postseason, all that stuff.
Right. And they were more cautious with him because what are they thinking? He's a guy. He's a dude.
And if they just do a stopgap this year and they don't think the platoon works out or Bubba Thompson or Ezekiel Duran or Josh Smith doesn't emerge as an everyday guy, then maybe Dustin Harris or Aaron Zavala next year does get the chance. And we say it a lot. You've got to have these prospects who are significant contributors to help the payroll.
It's got to,
And I know you can look at the say, all right, Martin Perez may not come back next year. That's $19 million saved. Andrew Heaney may not come back. That's $12.5 million saved. Well, there's $31 million to go get you a nice left fielder, you got to have some these low cost guys who can produce and be very good players. So that you can still have money to go get a closer or, extend one of the young guys, put that money toward an Adolis Garcia extension or something, just an example. But you have a farm system to supplement your big league roster or to trade them to supplement your big league roster. But I think that they really want these guys to be big leaguers with them.
I started my top 20 countdown. And I've already gotten the first one. I haven't sent it to you yet. So you guys know I do it five at a time and going through there. And I'm doing predictions of where I think they're going to start the season at. And actually, we talked about it last night when I was telling you I was on the other one. I think we all thought after the signings that they had at the starting position, at starting pitcher, that, Dane Dunning, I thought he might get moved. Otto, somebody. Nobody's been moved going into this. I'm starting to think that Leiter is going to end up at Frisco again. You're going to have Dunning, Otto. You've got Zach Kent. It's already been in AAA. Cody Bradford. I mean, there's a rotation.
Cole Wynn's
in AAA. Yeah. I mean, it would not surprise me to see Rocker and Leiter in AA to start the season.
Yeah, I think from high A, double A, and AAA, the Rangers might have more pitching depth than any organization.
It's crazy.
You bring up a good point. I wouldn't close the door on Otto or Dunning as a reliever. I would say Otto more so than Dunning.
Yeah.
But
he does set up for that pretty well.
Cole Wynn, Zach Kent are going to be in AAA.
Right.
One of Dunning or Otto, maybe both. But and they may, in the good news in AAA is you have 6-man rotations.
Right.
Early in the season, you may see guys piggyback.
Yeah.
Just because they have so many starters who probably are ready for AA, but there probably isn't a true spot for them in the rotation.
Right.
So you may see a Zach Kent, Cody Bradford piggyback system to start the season until they're a little more stretched out. And then by the end of April, who knows? The big league team might need a starter for a couple weeks and it just kind of will. It usually works itself out.
Sure.
You know, and
Very rarely do you use your five starting man rotation. Do you use five starters in a season? I mean, there's going to be 7 to 10 starters probably used throughout the year at the major league level.
And the 2011 Rangers are one of the few exceptions in baseball that have had their five man rotation go through the season without anyone going on the DL.
And it's not even really being injured as much as, you know, we need to skip a start, give this guy's arm a rest.
I think that's the case this year.
He tweaked his ankle a little bit, and, you know, this is a good cause to just let him get the ankle back going, DeGrom or something like that, and bring someone up. And like I said, this is always great. You want to see a guy come up to make a spot start, go 6 scoreless, then he gets one more start. Maybe he goes 5 2/3, gives up 1 or 2 runs, looks fantastic. That's a great issue to have.
Yeah,
when you got a minor leaguer coming up looking like he's ready and you're like, sorry, you got to go back down, that's fantastic to have that kind of depth.
Well, and you kind of, you know, if you go through like kind of some postseason history, like those Braves teams that were so good would always end up with their kick-ass prospects in the bullpen in the postseason.
Yep.
You know, Oswaldo Perez, who actually just died, I believe. That's an example. You know, Steve Avery, I know he pitched as a starter, but he was a young guy who came up and performed for that team.
David Need did that with the Braves before he went over to the Rockies.
There are guys who find themselves in that position. And, you know, of course, you know, the Rangers are talking postseason, and I know that seems like a stretch. I mean, a 68-win team, are you going to win 22 more games? I guess Tom Verducci the other day on MLB Network said that, you know, there's like the last 15 postseasons, I don't remember the number, 13 or 14 last postseasons have had, okay, let's say it's 15, 14 teams that were below 500 the year before have made the postseason. And he said the Rangers are the team to look for that to happen this year. You know, hey.
The Mets last year.
Maybe it does. You never know. They have, in theory, the pitching.
Right.
And since we're talking about the bus league, they have the quality minor league depth that can help out when somebody is injured.
Right. And they've got quality minor league position players that are on the cusp.
Sure.
Look, Evan Carter goes into – he's probably going to start Double A. I mean, that's where we all figure he's going to start as a 21-year-old. He's going to go to Double A.
He's 20.
He's 20. That's right. I keep forgetting how young he is.
He's married. That adds a year maybe. I don't know.
It does. He's probably had a couple. But let's say he goes into Double A and is just killing the ball. Gets up to AAA, and you're struggling or anything, scuffling anything in left field. Bruce Bochy just doesn't seem like a guy that's not going to go, give me the guy that's hitting.
Yeah.
I want the guy that can come up here and hit. So these guys are there to do it. What is it? Keith Law just did his top 100.
Keith Law did his MLB Pipeline did theirs last week. Keith Law did his Tuesday.
He said the Rangers organization was 7th. Uh-huh. Of all baseball, but he said they have young Latin and draft players that are coming up that could easily turn them into a top 3 by the end of this season, which is fair. He said they've only got – the reason he said that, they've only got one guy in their top 30 prospects who's likely to graduate this year for sure, and that's Josh Young.
Sure.
You know, because Duran and Smith are off the top 30.
Yeah.
They graduated.
Yeah, you kind of think of them as prospects, though.
Right,
you
know? Exactly.
They're not established.
Right.
Yeah.
So but anyway – top to bottom, you have to be. I think spring training, when we're out there, I think it's going to be packed like Fan Fest was. I think there's a lot of people fired up to go out because it is a time. If you're planning a vacation, this is a time where you can actually get about as close as you can get to these players and watch them throw and hit and do things on those backfields as you'll ever see. I mean, you go to any stadium, you're going to be back in the stands, but you can get.
Well, I mean, even at the spring ballparks, they're tiny. You're right up on them.
Exactly.
You know? So I mean, it's not like you're, in the third deck in right field. You're right there.
Hey,
so.
there's the batting cages there. You can walk over and stand outside the batting cages, literally against the fence, and watch your favorite players take batting practice 5 feet from you.
Yeah.
Right there, you can just go over and watch. I mean, if you're planning a trip, and we're going to be out there for our time, but I want to see some of these fans. You've got to be fired up.
Yeah, I think the turnout at FanFest, I think there were 7,000 people. A lot. They sold 4,500 tickets in advance.
Yep.
So I mean, that's a pretty good little number for late January. Yeah.
Anything else for – we do need to
announce? We do have one more thing, but no on this. But like I said earlier, myself and Joel Perez, our producer, videographer, was out there at FanFest too. And so John's going to say,
hey,
next time we'll see you at the yard, but you got to stay around because we have some highlights from FanFest.
Hey, the next, next time, guys, for next week, we will see you at the yard, but stick around. Here's some fun FanFest stuff and some good audio and our video for you guys to watch. But thanks for sticking around with us. And until we do our next show, see you at the yard. Here's the FanFest stuff.
All right.
I just think the pitching depth that they've acquired throughout the offseason is really going to put them into surefire contention, especially for one of those wild card spots.
Right. And the Rangers, I know they scored like the fifth most runs in the American League, and we were lacking major league starting pitching. And what did we do in the offseason? We signed that. Right. So I think it was beneficial to the Rangers for organization and the future. And I'm excited for the team and hopefully make the playoffs.
For sure.
Favorite Ranger, current, past, or present?
I'd say Adrian Beltre. He's my favorite.
Gotta go with Nolan Ryan. He's the best.
Only reason I play baseball is because of Pedro Rodriguez. Favorite Ranger of all time.
Currently, I'd say Adolis Garcia.
Pudge.
Michael Young.
My favorite Ranger of all time, Rafael Palmeiro.
Roxo Media House.